everybody, and welcome back to the mainstream. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got my co-host here. How you doing, Joe Turk?
I'm doing great. Good fun topic this week, or this podcast. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, we are going to be talking about the John Carpenter film Halloween. He didn't direct it though. The Tommy Lee Wallace, film Halloween 3. I think a lot of people still call it John Carpenter's because he had he had his hand in the cookie jar for a lot of it. Even though it wasn't his feature film. Now I want to explain something, and Joe asked me a question right before the show starts about if I had a copy of Halloween 3. And yes, I have a Blu-ray of it because I have the collection that has like all of them up to Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. Nice. However, I went to watch it again this week, and it is missing. And uh-oh. I think it's back in Virginia. I usually watch that for my, for my horror thing, like in, for Halloween. You know, it's usually my Halloween. It used to be Halloween 1, and then it became Halloween 3 as my, like, go-to Halloween movie. So it's kind of sad I don't have it. Now I can't watch it for Halloween. I think it's back in Virginia. I think I left it there, which kind of sucks.
Do you think Paul might have it right now?
No. I don't think Paul has it. I think it's literally at my house, my parents' house in Virginia. When I go visit, hopefully I'll pick it up there. But
that's interesting. I mean, you said you have a Blu-ray of it, because I saw a couple different Blu-rays available on Amazon, and I still have an older DVD of it. It's widescreen and everything, and it's nice. But I was like, ooh, a Blu-ray version would be awfully nice. And I saw one of the documentaries they had on YouTube, Shout Factory. I think Shout did one. It's called Standalone or something. But this definitely, I would really enjoy having this one on Blu.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Let me show you the collection I have. Talk to the audience while I...
Well, Halloween 3 came out. It was originally... There was a lot of back and forth on what they were going to do with this. Originally, it was supposed to be they were talking about doing an anthology series, doing different things, because you can do the same thing over and over. Sometimes that gets a little old. So there was a lot of back and forth with the studios and the rights and Carpenter being involved or not being involved. And they decided to go this route with this one. And it was originally Nigel Keane, I believe, originally wrote the original draft of it, but Carpenter revised it, and then Tommy Lee Wallace ultimately finished it off. And he's actually the only one that got the credit on it for the writing credit, but it was actually three people that was involved in the writing of it. So that's a little background on how it came about, but the movie got made because of it was a blessing, because it was part of the Halloween series. So it was made because of the name, and I think it's kind of cursed because of the name, I guess, in some ways, for a lot of people. And we'll get into that, because it's got a very polarizing viewpoints from a lot of people. That's a little bit of foundation on it. Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah. So this is the Halloween Complete Collection. It's got 10 disc set. It's got all 10 movies or whatever. The first one's got 5 of them, so it's got a Halloween 3 in there. But unfortunately, when I went to open it up, it was missing. So
yeah. When you look at mine, mine's a different. Like, you see, it's older version, but it's got the kids walking in the with the sun going down in the mountains and all, which was a good part of the montage and stuff like that towards the end. But I'm looking at the couple different versions that are out on Amazon. It's just, I know I got to get that on Blu-ray regardless of what anybody says, because it deserves it.
That complete collection is definitely worth it if you're a Halloween fan. You know, I don't know if it's like available. Like, I think Screen Factory put them out. So like all of them have like, you know, the, A lot of them have like special features, the normal special features that they have on the stuff, and then they got some like Halloween 3 would have had some extras that I wanted to check out, you know.
Yeah, like I believe didn't they? I think they filmed multiple endings to the movie, and I think Atkins, the main actor in it, he even said he wasn't sure which version, which ending they were going to choose. There was a book supposedly that was made off of this as well, and that one supposedly goes to a different type of ending, which it's a different ending than a lot of movies that it's very open ended, and I kind of like that. So
yeah,
and I mean, it can be thought of as some, it could be a happy ending, but it might not be a happy end. I mean, it's still, it depends on which way you want to perceive it and stuff. So
well, it's so funny this year, we have like a bunch of horror shows, horror podcasts on Indie Film Cafe. And so the mainstream this episode is focusing on Halloween 3. Horror Blood and Coffee, we just did a little while ago, that comes out on the day before Halloween. That was actually, we did Halloween 6 for that. And Halloween Ooh. 6 and Halloween 3 are sometimes viewed as like black sheep of the groups, you know, or whatever. Especially, well, I mean, 5 is just doggone like terrible, in my opinion. And I don't like, and I'm obviously also not a Resurrection fan.
That's the one that really rubs me.
Resurrection and the really Rob Zombies me. Like almost don't even feel like they're Halloween, you know, like even though they are Michael Myers and they are whatever, like I feel like they're Rob Zombie's movies. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I count them when I count Rob Zombie stuff, more or less, you know?
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. I mean, I know that he tried to get some of the people that was involved in it and stuff like that. But
Danielle
yeah,
Harris just came back and, you know, wonderful things like that. But, you know, let's talk about Halloween 3. So as you were saying originally that, this film was not okay. So the first movie was a huge hit. You know, I think they made way more money than they were expecting to make.
Yeah. I think it was like the number one independent film up until like Blair Witch came out, like profit wise.
People still use it when they're doing independent films for like financing and stuff. They still use that like that Halloween made such and such amount of money. Mm-hmm. When they put it in their budgets, they use that as an example of a film that can be spent for this amount of money and then gross, you know, so much. And it did so well that they had to do a sequel, which was Halloween 2. After Halloween 2 was, you know, still such a hit, you know, like people still liked Michael Myers. John Carpenter's original idea was that he didn't want to do, like if he did a Halloween 2, his original idea was to do it like, you know, a different movie, like each time, but they didn't get a chance to do that when they did Halloween 2. And I think that was the biggest problem, was that if they had done that on 2 instead of 3, you know, it would have, mm-hmm. I think, we would have had a different, it would have been a whole different world, because I don't think they would have gone back to Michael Myers. And I think the franchise probably would have died because people were expecting Michael Myers to be there. I don't think, I I don't know for a fact, obviously I can't predict what could have happened, but my idea is that it wouldn't have, like, people have been so confused. Like, wait, I thought this was the Michael Myers movie. Why is this Halloween 2? Right. Yeah. And then it just would have died, because it almost died from Halloween 3. You know, mm-hmm. people were outraged by the fact that Michael Myers was not in part, you know, except he is in it. He's in like
two spots that I know of. Because he's in the bar.
The scene where they're looking up the commercial. Yeah. And I think there was another one. They're watching another, you know.
It's when Atkins is being held down in the chair and he's being surveillance, the surveillance cameras on him in the Silver Shamrock's place. It's the movie that they're playing leading right up to the big giveaway at 9 o'clock. So
that's so funny.
Yeah. So and from my understanding, I believe they played because the time, the dates and everything was in sync with 1982. And I believe they were showing on Halloween night in 1982, the original Halloween on network TV, obviously a cut version and stuff like that. So it sort of was right in sync with how that would have time-wise would have played out. But
exactly.
But yeah, so, I mean, they have Michael in there a couple times and obviously Jamie Lee Curtis is in there a little bit too. Those scenes and a couple other little voice parts and stuff like that. But
so was Nancy Loomis. She was in the movie, you know, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I believe she played her character's name, which is kind of funny because it was Linda, which was the other friend in the original Halloween.
Oh, that's funny. Character. I didn't even realize that.
So it was just sort of and I believe she's also married to Tommy Lee Wallace, I'm not mistaken, in real life. Or was?
I wouldn't be surprised.
There was two couples that actually, from my understanding, it was them and Atkins, I believe, is married to the one who played Marge Gutman, the one who got zapped in the hotel.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, so I believe they were a couple too. So it was just sort of interesting little things. And then all the small, I mean, the crew and stuff like that. I mean, the director, obviously, same DP who did Halloween. Obviously Carpenter
Dean
Hill.
Dean Cundey, I think, was his name.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of amazing stuff over the years too. So
Dean Cundey is amazing. Let's see, who else? Just having... the score was amazing, done by John Carpenter and Alan Howarth. I've met Alan Howarth, and he is just like awesome. You know, very nice dude.
So is Howarth? Was he involved with Carpenter? Because I know they did like Escape from New York and The Thing and stuff like that. Was he involved? He might have been involved with them because the music sort of had that early '80s, mm-hmm. late '70s sort of vibe thing going.
He worked a lot with Carpenter back in the day. You said like Escape from New York. He did Christine. He did a ton of the ones, you know, because I guess at that particular moment, John Carpenter probably didn't want to do it all, you know, like all mm-hmm. Everything himself. So he worked with Alan and. I mean, at Alan's table at a convention, he had a bunch of the soundtracks and stuff from the movies. And I'm so mad that I didn't have like some extra money to go and buy those because I mean, that's a pretty cool deal right there. And I think he had some on like record, you know, and stuff. Ooh. So,
yeah. Well, this has a soundtrack that is, I mean, like I said, the movie in itself is kind of polarizing to some people and stuff like that. But the music to me, I absolutely love the music. I mean, it's just from the opening intro. I mean, where they set up with the pumpkin, they sort of took it like with how they did the first two, but it did its own thing. And from that point, you automatically know it's like, okay, this is going to be something else. but yet they still tried to keep that, and maybe that goes with the anthology aspects of it too, that there was going to be that running little thing going if this would have caught on and made the money. But I don't think this even made what, 15 million at the box office. But I don't think it's the lowest dollar wise of all the Halloween movies. I think like Halloween 5 might've been the lowest. Or maybe 6 might've been down there too. I'm sure because that Dimension didn't release that very big. I don't believe.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's weird because like everybody, a lot of people like, I feel like this is a hit or miss, you know, mm-hmm. either you really love it or you really don't like it, you know, kind of thing. And, it's cheesy at times, you know, but it's interesting, you know, and, the places that they shot, for the town, I mean, there's a series and we've seen it, because we watched it for, The Fog when we did, mm-hmm. there's a series called The Horrors Hollow Grounds that, that Sean Clark does. And, it's funny cause Sean Clark actually manages, Alan Howarth, you know, so that's
okay.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. But, Sean did Horrors Hollow Grounds, and he would go to different locations and check them out and show what they look like now. And one of the things, you know, he did, he does that. It's on this, this disc for this Blu-ray, you know, is like, you know, the locations of the places that they shot it, and just amazing, like what they look like now. They still look this, a lot of them still look the same. I mean, it's just, it's really cool.
Yeah, one of the documentaries that I saw a little bit on YouTube the other day was they said that the bar still has the painting up behind the bar that was in the scene from the movie. And I mean, that's what, almost 40 years later now. So it's just in, and I guess it's the same area that they shot some of the stuff for The Fog. And there's overlap with a few of the scenes. I mean, when Tom Atkins is talking to his wife on the phone, and taking the beer to go run off with the run off the Santa Mira. But that's the same spot that the nurse in Halloween 2 was talking with her friend, saying she had to take her home. It's the same spot. It's like it's so. I mean, they use locations and different elements, homages or just popular places that fit really well.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, but from my understanding, I think the town that they used for this Santa Mira, it's not too far from LA, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't it like called Sierra Madre or something like that?
And you know where Santa Mira is actually from, right?
That's from is it Body Snatchers?
Yep, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah. So that's what I always loved about like John Carpenter. You can tell that's a John Carpenter thing, mm-hmm. because he likes, and I could be wrong, it could have been a Tommy Lee Wallace thing for all I know, but I'm pretty sure it's a John Carpenter thing, because he likes old school movies that inspired him to be a filmmaker, like The Thing, you know, mm-hmm. was actually inspired by the original The Thing, you know, what's it called? The Thing that... Jesus Christ. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like The Thing is actually a remake of The Thing from Another World. Good God.
Okay.
I'm not gonna remember the fucking title. The Thing from Another World. And he actually put A Thing from Another World in Halloween, not knowing that like years later he would be actually remaking it. And so maybe he thought he might one day remake Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but in a way he kind of did, like,
yeah,
in a way Halloween 3 is sort of Invasions of the Body Snatchers in a way, like, except they're just hypnotizing people, you know, or whatever, and controlling people's minds, you know.
It is like a pod movie versus the first two Halloween being like slasher films, because it's like the pod elements of, and then whatever they're doing to create the assassins, making them robots, but lifelike robots, whatever. I know that there's a whole witchcraft element in the movie as well, with the whole Irish backgrounds and stuff like that. And I like that. Obviously with science fiction horror, you sometimes have to suspend belief on some elements, but, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot deeper elements to this that if you want to let yourself go with it and just sort of, now some of it, like you said earlier, can be considered cheesy or, over the top and stuff like that. But I think that's what makes this a lot of a fun movie, really, in a lot of ways.
Right.
When Cochran's showing them around the mask place, and they show like all the old toys and stuff like that, and talk about how he was a jokester and a ultimate prankster and stuff like that, and I mean how that led to systematically what Cochran's idea was to ultimately wipe out a certain population of kids in the world. That's pretty evil in a lot of ways, but it's done with it's done in a way that's like with the sci-fi element that just really catches me as something so different than the other Halloweens, which is fine to me. I mean, I'm probably one of the biggest Michael Myers fans there could be, but I really like this in its own way, and that's So we were talking a little bit after the intro and stuff like that. One of the first scene of the movie really catches me. I love it. I mean, with the Gimbridge, the dad, he's running in, he runs into screen, the music, it's like building right up, and it's like in this dark junkyard, whatever, construction area and stuff like that. And it's just, it's like, what the hell's going on here? You see, and then you see these cars, this car coming around, and the music, it's just, I love the music, the tense music that just builds right from the beginning. It was just like, okay, this is nice. I'm really enjoying this and all. And it was suspenseful. I mean, that part really wasn't the humorous parts of it, if you will. And, mm-hmm. And it set it up really well. I mean, and watching it on repeated viewings and stuff like that, it's like all these different pieces, they sort of intertwine together nicely.
Definitely. I like old man, was it like the Cochran character, because I want to call him old man Cochran, because that was
Connell Cochran.
Connell
I thought
Cochran.
For the longest time it was like Colonel Cochran or something, but Connell Cochran, his because the way he explained stuff, and I mean he had like a big history in film and TV and stuff like that. The actor who played him,
and Harley
Don
O'Harely.
Yeah. So but there's a scene that really, when I was watching it the other day, it's just his facial expression is absolutely priceless. It shifts. It's when they're given the showing around the campus and everything like that, with everything being made, and they talk about the one area about the final processing being private, and that's where obviously some bad things are going on. And he tells Buddy Cuffer, he looks over at Buddy Cuffer, says something like trade secrets, and then Colonel Cochran sort of has a smile, but it shifts into a demonic glare. And it's just like, I was like, oh, that's priceless. Because it just shows the element of that he was.
Well, it's funny. So, I wanted to call him Old Man Cochran, but like his character in RoboCop was the old man. And
Old man.
Yeah. So it's really funny. But he, you know, like he at one point in his life, he unfortunately passed at the age of like 85, which is, I mean, pretty good, you know, pretty good life, I would say. Of living.
He was probably like 70 or so when he did this, I think. Probably. Yeah. Because, I mean, he had to be.
He died in like 2005, I want to say.
Okay. So.
So, yeah. Let's see. He died at, 2005. And he was 85. And he made this in 82. So, he was
mid-60s, yeah.
He's mid-60s.
Mid-60s, yeah.
But I mean, I think they made him look a lot older, too, period. But he did such a great job. I loved him. He was in The Last Starfighter. He was in tons of movies, you know, especially in the 80s. Like, it's funny because in RoboCop, also, he was with Ronnie Cox. Ronnie Cox also was like a thing of the 80s, you know, a big deal in the 80s. And so, I mean, if you look at that movie, which one day I want to do for Hollywood Boulevard podcast at some point, is do RoboCop. I don't know if I want to do the whole series or if I just want to concentrate on the first one, because the first one's the best. All the rest are meh.
It won't be the remake, I'm sure. Not the remake either.
Oh God, I don't think I've even seen the remake. The only reason I have a copy is I think it was given to me or something.
Somebody got rid of it. They're like, here.
It was Paul. Paul got rid of it. Oh, Paul didn't want
that it. Sounds like Paul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I don't even know why he had it to begin with. But yeah, I'm not a huge, and it wasn't the Blu-ray either of it. So I don't even know if I even really care for it. Care to look at it, but RoboCop is one of my favorites. And so it was really nice to see. It's always nice to see people that you familiar faces, you know, in movies. So I always remember seeing him going, oh, that's the old man, you know? which is great. You know, I didn't know his name, until just recently. I didn't even know his, you know, like, I mean, I never looked him up. I don't know why, but he's in a lot of movies, you know, like he had a career, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He had a ton of credits. In the documentary, Atkins was talking about him and about how how they sort of hit it off with some of the talking about this bringing credibility to the project. O'Hillary's like past experience and stuff like that. He had some knowledge of old Irish customs, and if you will, so it sort of fit into the role really nicely.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So speaking of Atkins in the main character, this movie did something a little different than a lot of movies in that it had sort of a 45-50-year-old guy who's supposedly a doctor, but he has a drinking problem and he's going out with younger, he's messing with younger women. He pats the nurse on the butt, even right. The older nurse.
He doesn't just pat it on the butt, I think he squeezes it.
Yeah. And he talks to the girl that's investigating the remnants of the car explosion with and everything. And it's like he's like almost 50. He has two kids, divorced, and he grabs a six pack and runs off with a 20-some-year-old girl. And it's just you don't see that in today's movies. I mean, it's in him being the quote hero. I love that.
It's definitely a product of its time. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. You don't see that, you know, and you don't see that in the films these days, because heroes, even in earlier than the 80s, you didn't see that, you know, that was not that. I don't even think you see that a lot, you know, period. You know what I mean? You don't see really, you didn't want somebody who, as your hero, to be somebody that people couldn't look up to. You don't look up to Tom Atkins in the movie. You don't look up to him. You just kind of admire that he actually saves the day, you know, but you don't look up to him as like, this is the star of your movie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's like they intro with obviously the father going and running around, and then he runs up against the gas station attendant, and the gas station attendant takes him to the hospital. And I mean, this has all happened and stuff like that before we really even get introduced to Atkins' character. So it's not that often that a lead is sort of tabled a little bit into the story, not too deep into the story, obviously. But then at the hospital, it's like when we see the assassins, it's like, and one of them, I believe, Dick Warlock played a couple of them, who's does the Shape, or didn't he do the Shape?
He did the Shape. Yeah.
So it's just seeing those characters. I mean, even in the first scene where the old guy, when he crunches the one assassin between the cars when he's fighting for his life, it's like, what the heck is going on here?
But right.
So when he gets to the hospital, and it's like then the assassin comes in and brutally kills him. I mean, that's just talk about the arm strength to have to do something like that. But it's just like, okay, what's happening here? Where's this going? And to me, that's sort of the special element to this. It's there's nothing predictable at all about this movie. Introducing Stacey Nelkin as Ellie, the daughter, after he's dead and everything, after her dad's dead, introduced her, and then they had like a few days pass and stuff like that, and they talked about a funeral and stuff like that. And when she runs into Atkins at the bar, and I think that was really good too, because it was a little bit of a setup to really where stuff was going. It wasn't like the next day they're running and doing something and stuff like that. So I like that there's pieces to it, and she talks about that she does some research and stuff like that, trying to find out what's going on. I really like that, because it wasn't just a nonsensical action film or horror film. So what do you think about Stacey Nelkin and Ellie's character?
I mean, that she's the girl, the girl with him, right? Like she's the daughter of the I thought she was okay. I mean, honestly, she didn't blow me away, or she didn't like not blow me away. You know, like I felt she was good. I mean, you know, like she had, you could tell she had a little bit of chemistry with Tom mm-hmm. Atkins, you know, and everything. But like the scene that always just gets me kind of like, what the fuck, is like the scene where he's like, I could go sleep in my car if whatever, right? And she was like, where do you want to sleep? And I'm like,
that's
what?
A dumb question to ask.
Like, seriously? Like, dude, you're a married man and you're like hitting on like a 20-year-old. Like, go well, good for you. Like, you know, but
he was divorced. He was divorced, or he said he was divorced or something, but he seemed to be hitting on everybody because he said he owed that other girl, the forensics girl, he owed her a few dinners, and she sort of gave him a kiss at 1.2. And Atkins is hitting on the nurse, like we talked about earlier, squeezing her.
He was a player, so like, man.
Yeah, so it's he doesn't fit the player appearance at all,
right?
Just sort well, of, but
I, you know, I can still see it though. You know, like just the way he is. You know who Tom Atkins always reminds me of?
Who's that?
Tim Thomerson from like Trancers.
Okay, Trancers. Yeah.
And I always kind of like, I used to always get them confused. I mean, they have the mustache and they're older, you know, characters or whatever actor, you know what I mean? But like, I always used to get them confused. And I would love to see a movie where they're together playing like brothers, you know, like I could see that, you know?
Well, I think isn't Thomerson probably a little bit taller and Atkins a little bit bulkier, but I could see where that, I could see, I mean, the gray, the silver hair, especially nowadays or in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, but Atkins, I was looking him up just some of the stuff he's done. And I mean, he's what, 85 now or something like that. And I mean, I just enjoyed his take on the character and just some of the stuff that they did. I mean, he shows up, he's trying to be a dad to his kids, sort of, I guess. He tries to bring the mask, the generic mask home to his kids. And the kids are like, no, we got the Silver Shamrock mask, which, it's like, okay, somebody else is, to me, it serves two purposes. One, it helps show that somebody else is helping, or the mom looking out for their interests better than the dad is, one. But two, it also sets up motivation for Atkins' character, not just to save the world, if you will, of kids. It's his own kids are at stake. So he has real incentive to save his kids.
Now, I've always wondered why... you know, there's the scene, the stuff with Tom Atkins. Why after Halloween 3 didn't he work with John Carpenter again? I don't know if John Carpenter just, you know, if they, you know, it was like sort of the failure of Halloween 3 kind of made him not want to, because like they had worked together on The Fog, then Escape from New York, and then all of a sudden they were working on you know, he was the lead guy once again in Halloween 3. And I don't know if he just kind of, you know, got other work and just never, you know, or if John Carpenter never had another part for him to play, you know, or
yeah,
whatnot.
He's done a ton of work, but yeah, he's never worked in with that group again. So,
yeah.
I don't know if there was any issues or, I mean, it doesn't sound like it, just hearing them talk when they had the reunions and stuff like that. It sounds like they had a good time making it overall. But I mean, other than the fact that said, I believe that Atkins was sick on the set a lot. He got really like, he had like walking pneumonia or something like that.
Right.
That he got sick on the set. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's interesting that they worked together on some big time films before that. But this one, this is the last time they seem to work together. But one of the other characters the guy who plays Buddy Kupfer, Ralph Strait, he didn't do a whole lot of films, but he was in a movie that same year, which is sort of another, it's one of my B-movies that I really like, The Beastmaster. I don't know if you remember that movie.
The first one, I guess?
He's the first Beastmaster.
I'm a sucker for Beastmaster 2, A Portal in Time. I don't know.
All with Mark Singer.
Well, Mark Singer was in both, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of no, the girl. The girl was it Laurie, or was it Kari Wuhr? I think.
Yeah.
The Girl from Anaconda.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, he was in both Beastmasters, but yeah.
Was there three Beastmasters, or was there not? Like, I don't know.
Two was like the Portal of Time, but then I think there actually was a third one. I know in the early 90s they were doing a lot of sequels and stuff like that. So straight to video sequels, because that market was just huge and all. But
they even did a movie or a TV show.
Beastmaster TV show.
Yeah, which you can watch on Prime apparently. But there was two, three. And Mark Singer was in third one with Tony Todd, you know.
Interesting.
So, and then and Rip Torn was, I always love that name. I'm sorry, Rip Torn. You know,
well, he was like, in the first Beastmaster, but that's was what I'm he saying. In the other ones?
No, yeah. He was only in the first, I believe. I don't think he came back for the second. James Avery, AKA the Fresh Prince's uncle. No, the Fresh Prince's uncle. Oh.
From Good Times, the dad was John Amos. He's in the first Beastmaster. I remember that.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking of. But anyways, it was like when I saw him in at Halloween 3, for a number of years, I was like, what do I know him from? And then one time I was watching Beastmaster, I was like, there it is. There it is. And I think he did some other stuff, but I mean, nothing else really jumps out at me except that he has done. But
I gotta rewatch the Beastmaster movies at some point. They're so cheesy, but I think I wasn't a fan. I'm not a fan of like sword and sorcery kind of movies or whatever, you know, like people with swords fighting, you know, like I was never really into He-Man and, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's probably what Beastmaster really is, though, in a lot of ways. There's a lot of He-Man element.
Right. Some of that. I think like at that time period, they wanted to do a He-Man movie and they couldn't afford to. Yeah. Well, they did the Masters of the Universe later. Did you notice like Masters of the Universe and Beastmaster 2 Portal in Time are very similar to each other?
Yeah.
Think about it, you know, because they both end, you know, coming to like this time period and everything. I think that's really funny. But Master of the Universe came first, and then so that's because I actually saw Beastmaster 2 before I saw Masters of the Universe. So once again, like I said, I was never a He-Man fan, so I never wanted to see the Dolph Lundgren He-Man and everything. Sorry, we're going
That time. Yeah, I know. Like we've gone from like Halloween 3 way off topic here. See, so back to Halloween 3. It's well, talking about Buddy Kupfer and the Kupfer family, when they introduce them when they're driving in the Winnebago at the hotel, the hotel or motel, almost the bike comes off the rack and almost hits Atkins' character Chalice, and then but then the boy comes out, is like, is my bike all right? He drives off, and his mom's like, don't go too far. The boy flips off his mom. I'm like, what the heck
is that? Was definitely once again a product of its time, because like nobody would ever show that these days.
The kid and just kids in general being at risk in this is something that wouldn't be as easily and then what happens to the boy in that test room is just brutal. And I mean, I don't think they would do much of something like that in today's films.
No, not at all.
But it works in this one, though.
It did. And this movie actually, like we said before, it's a product of its time. There are a lot of stuff that they just like that things just couldn't get done today because we live in a society that doesn't acknowledge these things, don't like these things, you know. And if they made Halloween 3 today, it would definitely be a different movie. I mean, the main character would be completely different. She wouldn't be a womanizing jackass, you know, kind of character. He would be like, unless he was played by Bruce Campbell or something, you know. Which I could see Bruce Campbell in a Halloween movie, you know, like, you know, Ash versus Michael Myers. Why not?
So we've gone about so far into this, and we haven't touched on the jingle. 8 more days to Halloween, you know, and all that.
And then it became like, it got all the way down to, I think, like 2 more days or 1 more day or something, all the way down there. Yeah, but
I'm counting down to the big giveaway. But reading that was, they wanted to find something that was in the public domain to where they wouldn't have any rights issues, and got London Bridge is Falling Down as sort of the foundation for, and then they just obviously changed the lyrics around. And from my understandings, Tommy Lee Wallace did the voice on it as well. And
the announcer?
And they also did something with the singing and like sang it slow, but then sped it up to make it work as a jingle a little bit more. But it works, and it's sort of obviously interwoven all throughout the film. I mean, and it's like annoyingly catchy, like most jingles sometimes get. And
it's London Bridges, you know. It's London Bridges falling down, falling down.
Yeah.
Now, London Bridges falling down. You know, my fair lady.
Silver Shamrock.
My fair lady, and then that thing is Silver Shamrock. And it's very clever that they were able to take something that was public domain, like that jingle, and sort of make it their own thing, to the point where they put it on the menu for, you know, for Halloween 3 on the Blu-ray. So if you fall asleep to that movie, that shit's in your head, man.
Well, I guess that would be the guy you met. You said Alan Holworth. You met him and stuff like that. So he was that's just the, but it works because there's so much TV taken over in the 80s and using that intertwined. I mean, like when Chalice left to go run off with the girl with the beer and the six pack, the camera panned over at the TV shops and it popped up on there that jingle and stuff like that. And that's sort of, I mean, that's what happens nowadays. Even it's like when you get that something that really takes over, it's just, they play it to death.
I know. The progressive commercials and shit. Oh my goodness. Ugh.
Yeah. Stuff like that. One of the other things that they showed on the TV, which was kind of interesting. And I know that they don't really touch too deeply into it. It's somewhat in the story, but it's like, I don't understand really. And Wallace even said in one of the documentaries, he's like, oh, come on now. The Stonehenge stuff. At the very beginning, they say that like a rock, when the Stonehenge rocks is missing and stuff like that. And it's like, it's played on the TV clip and stuff like that. And it's like, and then when they're in the warehouse thing and they're showing them chiseling parts of the rock about it has magic and stuff like that to it. And it's like, what is it about that? But I think that's where you start getting into the question. It's like, okay, sci-fi, you just got to sort of suspend belief and stuff like that for what it was really doing and all. But to me, it's just what they did there. And then at the how it just constantly built the tension up to the very end when he's sitting there screaming on the phone to cut it off. And stuff like that. After it's like, They cut the movie without saying if that last station cut off. So it's like, you don't know if mass murders happened from these things going off everywhere, or if they did get it cut off. And I think that I like that ambiguity sort of, is like, so you could sort of determine for yourself, was it a happy ending or was it not? Because to me, it's like, I don't think they really, it ever cut off. I think that it went off and there was a lot of death that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened in the original idea of the story. And supposedly something, when it goes to credit, it's supposed to be one of the other versions. You hear people screaming, kids screaming or something like that. And I'm just like, I want to see this, see if those other options are available to see anywhere. That would be really good. But some of the Blu-ray sets that I've seen have all different types of stuff on them. So whether it's documentaries, reunion stuff, deleted scenes, what have you.
Sadly, it doesn't have it on here. It doesn't have deleted scenes. All it has is audio commentary with writer-director Tommy Lee Wallace. Standalone, The Making of Halloween 3. That's the thing you saw, right? The documentary you saw?
Yeah, that's what I saw. That's what I saw, yes.
And then Horror's Hollow Grounds. Still gallery and theatrical trailers and TV spots. So,
And I believe there's a Universal Blu-ray also that probably has some different other stuff on it. So
maybe.
I think seeing those would watching the documentary was really good too, because they talked about how it sort of got forgotten for a number of years after it came out, because it was it didn't do a whole lot and it was pulled from the theaters pretty quickly and stuff. But like 15 years or maybe 20 years later, like 2005, 2010 area, Wallace was they had a special screening of it, and like everybody, it was like packed. And it was like, they didn't realize it had such a cult following. And that sort of goes in like with me and you talking about it in the past and leading up to this discussion. I know that we've talked about different stuff on social media, and some, a lot of people come on there and be like, about it and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, you just got to look at it a little differently. You just got to take it in a different way. And I mean, to me, that's the beauty of this film. Now, at home here, I can't, my wife does not, this movie annoys
her. You told me that before. Your wife does not like this movie.
Yeah, she says the music grates her, and in this, the sci-fi element, just, it's freaky on her. When the assassins get killed, the orange juice, blood, whatever they had going on there, it really bothers her, and she's not a horror fan just in general anyways, but when we talk about the other Halloweens and stuff like that, and I asked her, I said, would you rather watch Michael Myers or this, and the original Halloweens, and
right,
it's really telling that this is polarized, how polarizing this film is. She'd rather watch that one, the original Halloween first, before this, and she,
yeah,
is,
that's
terrified.
Bad, but she'd rather watch the Michael Myers movies than this one.
Yeah, but the mask scares her, and I understand the fear, because I played a joke on her years ago with a mask, and I understand that she like literally would tear up.
Does she know that's William Shatner?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I've talked to her about that and stuff, and but it just, this one is a very, it's one that, and I don't think she's alone in that. I think there's a lot of people that don't care for this movie. And I think that some of it's because it went off into a whole detour from what the first two Halloweens were.
Well, I mean, you touched on it a bit with the sci-fi element. I mean, I think the mm-hmm. sci-fi element makes it a little creepier, especially since, a lot of people are afraid of brain control, because it can, you know, mind control, which can actually happen, you know, and stuff, and controlling people, you know, is a very scary, you know, thing. Goes back to the Vision of the Body Snatchers thing we were talking about earlier. So, I mean, and, you know, it just depends, you know, like,
yeah. And those, and whatever the little computer chip things that were in there that worked with it, that just sort of kicked. I mean, that's, It seems so far-fetched, but in some ways, I mean, it fits the sci-fi. It seems far-fetched, but at the same time, thinking of it nowadays, that somebody could hack into a your phones or anything like that, I mean, uh-huh. it can cause trouble. I mean, now I don't think if it gets zapped with things from Stonehenge, it's going to turn into snakes coming out of our heads and stuff like that. But snakes and crickets,
maybe,
and whatever else.
All these days, crazier shit's happening. Like, it's fucking 2020. Are you kidding me? Like, anything can happen these days.
I guess it could go that route, but it's like, I think that's what makes sci-fi and sci-fi horror kind of enjoyable, that they could do that sort of thing. And
yeah.
And sometimes you just sort of throw out, and it's like, okay, I just got to let it ride. Whatever the rules are they're trying to make for the movie, then let it be what it is. And this has that. I mean, this isn't trying to be a slasher film. It's trying to be its own thing. And on that note, I think it's extremely successful.
It definitely holds up to like one of the Halloween movies to watch, you know, because if you want to watch the original Halloween on Halloween, that's perfect. That's what I used to do. But if you want to watch something that's a little bit different, still has that same feel of like, you know, this is a Halloween movie, you know. But yeah, I think that's a great place to stop. I think this was a great discussion. I had a lot of fun. So real quick, I want to remind everybody that this is the last episode for now. I do not know if and when I'll bring this back. We are pretty much meshing the mainstream into Hollywood Boulevard podcast. So if you listen to Hollywood Boulevard podcast, you'll hear Joe again. He's going to be our new co-host with me and Alfred. And we're really excited. That's going to be in season 4 or something. Yes, season 5, whatever it is, of Hollywood Boulevard. I think it's season 5 of Hollywood Boulevard podcast. So join us for that. I think you might be in the next one that we're doing in November for Hollywood Boulevard, but then you'll definitely be back for next year, for next season and everything. And we're really excited about that. We have other podcasts that are coming out soon. You know, I can't even talk about some of them because we haven't announced them yet, but and we're not going to be announcing one of them till like the day before Halloween, where it'll be one more day till Halloween.
I tell you, it's always in the head, and it'll take forever for it to go away now. But I think that's sort of it. That's what it was meant to be, and that's what it worked.
Definitely. But I'm really happy that we got a chance. I think this was the perfect movie to end the mainstream on. I think this was the, you know, sort of a thing, a product of like of Hollywood, you know, that needed at that particular time needed to be done. So I'm very happy with everything. I'm glad that the mainstream was around for, I think we did like 10 episodes or so, you know, like, or whatever, 8 or 10, you know, and I think that's amazing. We were able to get so many throughout the year. And thank you, Joe, for being my co-host for the majority of them, you know. And I know we'll be back with, you know, Hollywood Boulevard podcast with like similar stories and different and more, you know, other films that we'll be talking, maybe the Beastmaster or is the Beastmaster Hollywood? It's tough. It's almost approaching indie territory. I think, I don't know. Cause like it's cult, but it's not, I think it is Hollywood. I don't know. I'd have to look that up, but RoboCop is definitely Hollywood.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was so mad that they never made RoboCop versus Terminator. They made a comic out of it. They never made it into something. I
never saw a comic for that. That'd be interesting to look at.
I used to actually have it years ago. Mm-hmm. I threw away all my comics because I got dirty and, you know, whatever. But I used to have them, and maybe one day I'll get them again. But I really just, mm-hmm. I don't have any place to store them, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. That's why I got rid of most of mine, you know. So one day I might go back and get another collection, but I just don't have anything for them. So I've got enough movies. That's enough, you know, for a collection. I don't need more shit to collect. But yeah, so thank you, Joe. Thank you, everybody who listened. Check us out, indiefilmcafe.podbean.com, indiefilmcafe.reviews, and Patreon. Don't forget our Patreon, where so we have a thing. If you give us $1, just $1, and we get about $5, so we need 5 people to give $1, I will watch a crappy movie that I watched before that I don't want to watch again, but I will only if I'm getting paid to watch it. $10,
Paul will pick out one of those. Isn't there one or two of them that's like really top of the line?
Well, that's what we that's what we're doing. Is we're doing Actium Maximus will be the first one. I'll rewatch that again, and I hated that movie. And then if we get $10, I will watch Barn of the Blood Llama as well. So. And we'll do reviews for Patreon only. So there you go. It's an incentive to just give us $1 a month. That's it. You know, it's not like we're asking for a lot here. But if we get up to $5 more than we already have, I will do that, and $10 more I'll do too. If I get five more after that each time, I will watch another really terrible movie. And then after I run out of ones that, yeah, I really don't want to do, Paul will pick something, I'm sure, you know. So if we can start getting some Patreon love, help us out, because it helps pay for this stuff. Is not cheap. I have to actually throw in a lot of my own money, which is great. I don't mind doing it, but, you know, it'd be helpful to basically make, you know, do this with help, you know. So anyway, thank you guys for checking this out. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Joe, stick around. I'll talk to you real quick after this is done. And everybody, thank you so much. And keep checking out indiefilmcafe.podbean.com. And remember to check out the Hollywood Boulevard podcast, because that's where basically all of this is going to start to just melt into. So you'll start seeing a lot of similar stuff, you know, in the next season. So thank you guys, and hope you guys enjoyed the show. Bye.
See you later. Bye.